Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.
You're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, you can stream our show live weekdays at 11 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Angela Davis, and you're listening to NPR News. On Wednesdays, I like to focus on wellness. And today, I want to talk about the winter blues. Doctors call it seasonal affective disorder. It's also known as SAD, seasonal depression. And what makes it different this year is that so many of us are already anxious and upset by all that 2020 has brought us with the COVID-19 pandemic, the election season, and a summer of protest and civil unrest over police brutality. This hour, we're also going to talk about sleep. What is getting in the way of getting a good night's sleep? What is disrupting sleep? I imagine many Minnesotans are worried about their jobs, their kids' performance in school during distance learning, their health as they try to avoid contracting coronavirus. There's a lot to keep us up at night. Two doctors are joining me this hour as we talk about these two challenges to our well-being right now. What can we do to improve our health, both our physical and mental health during such a challenging time? And I want to hear from you during this discussion this hour as we talk about the winter blues and sleep problems. The phone lines are open, and here's the phone number, 651-227-6000. Again, that's 651-227-6000. You can tweet me at Angela Davis, NPR. On the phone this hour, we have Dr. Mike Howell. Dr. Howell is the Vice Chair for Education and Faculty Affairs in the Department of Neurology at the University of Minnesota. He's also the Director of the Sleep Performance Training for Athletes Program at M Health Fairview. Dr. Howell, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Angela. It's nice to talk to you.
You too. Also today, we have Dr. Sadra Wilson. Dr. Wilson is a psychiatrist and a neuromodulation fellow at the University of Minnesota Medical School. Good morning to you, Dr. Wilson.
Good morning, Angela.
Hi. Thank you both for your time. I'm eager to talk about this because I've just been thinking about it a lot. And so, doctors, in general, do you find that most folks are struggling emotionally right now, not sleeping as well, adjusting to the change in weather as well here in Minnesota, as it is getting colder and getting darker outside much earlier each night? Dr. Howell?
Oh, certainly. Anytime some stress comes up, we often have trouble sleeping. And then if you combine it with just the general loss of sunlight that comes with the wintertime, people can often have trouble not only falling asleep at night, but they can have trouble waking up in the morning and feeling like their brain is ready to go for the day.
Yeah, you have a camera in my bedroom, right? You just described me.
No, I don't.
Dr. Wilson, aren't most people in general just feeling kind of gloomy more often these days?
That has been my experience here in my clinic. A lot of people's routines have been greatly disrupted by coronavirus and trying to protect themselves and trying to protect their families. So a lot of the behaviors, interactions, and positive activities that they use to help support their mood, they've had to get really creative and flexible and find alternatives.
Mm-hmm. Now, I read that a study by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention shows that more Americans are definitely reporting declining mental health. And a CDC survey conducted back in June, and that was when many of us could still spend time outdoors. That's when they did the study. But now as the temperatures drop, Dr. Wilson, and the daylight hours diminish and social isolation continues because of the pandemic, are you worried that seasonal depression will have an even harsher effect this year?
Seasonal affective disorder can have a broad range of severity. So many people may have been experiencing mild symptoms in the past. But yes, the additional stress may make people more likely to have more moderate and severe symptoms this year, and they may need to think differently about how they manage seasonal affective disorder.
And, you know, a lot of times we may think we have a condition and we kind of will put off, you know, a doctor's appointment for a diagnosis. But Dr. Wilson, explain the symptoms of SAD. What exactly does it look like?
So the thing to remember is that seasonal affective disorder is a type of depression. So it may have a lot of the symptoms of other types of depression. So feeling sad and depressed, losing interest in hobbies and things that you enjoy, having really low energy, trouble concentrating. But one of the things that stands out about seasonal affective disorder, the type of depression that is worse in the winter, is people are more likely to have problems with sleep where they oversleep.
Oh, get,
and they're
get
more
too
likely
much sleep.
To have problems with increased appetite and weight gain.
Mm-hmm. And Minnesotans do, because of where we're located geographically, can you tell us how that factors into seasonal affective disorder?
Yes. The estimates for seasonal affective disorder have a broad range from up to 1% to all the way up to 10% of adults being affected. And it can matter where you live. So your latitude, your distance from the equator and the latitudes farther away from the equator tend to get less sunlight in the winter, and that means more and more people in these locations can be affected by seasonal affective disorder.
And so when we look at the cause of it, is it because we just don't have access to as much sunshine? Is that part of it?
That is a big part of it, and that is why light therapy is one of the best treatments that you can do to change your exposure to light with an artificial bright light to make up for the fact that you're just not going to get it from outside right now.
Mm-hmm. And we've heard, I mean, this discussion about light boxes, light lamps, light therapy, not new, but has technology greatly improved some of the light therapy options that are available?
Now, something to keep in mind when we talk about our light therapy options, yes, you are going to see a lot of different options out there. But the thing that you need to keep most in mind is that there really hasn't been a really extreme change in the science. Mm-hmm. And because light therapy boxes are not regulated by the FDA, that you really have to do your homework and make sure you're picking the safest option, because the one with the most bells and whistles may not actually be the most effective. Mm. I have a few kind of guide points to help you select an effective light therapy box and what's the bare minimum that you need in terms of cost and safety here.
Okay, well, before we get to that, I want to remind listeners, if you're just tuning in, what we're talking about. We're talking about sleep problems and the winter blues, seasonal affective disorder, what a lot of people experience as we get into the colder weather and, you know, the darker and longer days here in Minnesota, and how this winter, because we've already been living through months of a pandemic, a lot of folks may be experiencing more sleep problems and have, you know, larger issues with seasonal affective disorder than they have in the past. We have two doctors on the line and we're taking your phone calls. So if you want to talk about sleep problems, you want to talk about the winter blues, now's the time to do it. Give us a call at 651-227-6000. And I'm also on Twitter at Angela Davis, MPR. Dr. Howell, before we talk more about light therapy and SAD, the sleep problems. And I've been seeing the term pandemic insomnia a lot in news articles. Tell us more about that.
Sure. Well, anytime, I think all of us recognize that if you have a bad day, you find out some unfortunate news regarding maybe a job or a relationship, we often have trouble falling asleep. But right now, the entire planet is experiencing stress unlike anything we've experienced certainly in our lifetimes. And so all of us are provoked into acute tendency towards insomnia. The challenges arise when, as this stress just persists and persists and persists, that we can turn this into chronic insomnia. That's the real risk. All of us can go a couple of nights, maybe a week or two, not being able to sleep particularly well because of an acute stressor. But once this turns into chronic insomnia, that is when we really need to pay close attention to it and to recognize that addressing our sleep, Angela, is a great opportunity. There's so little that we can do about the pandemic, about the economy, but you can sleep better. And sleeping better improves your mood, can improve your appetite, but also it can improve your immune system. One of the best ways to actually help prevent and fight against COVID is to boost your immune system by sleeping better.
Tell me more about that. What happens when we are sleeping, when we're in that good rest mode? Because, you know, does it just help our body kind of recover and all of our organs just get a chance to rest and be as healthy as possible?
Oh, absolutely. Our brain recovers. This is with good, healthy sleep. We don't always get good, healthy sleep, of course, but our brain recovers, our body recovers, all of our cells and our immune system. Our immune system is recharged. I'm reminded of a study that occurred a couple years ago that showed that one of the best ways you can boost your immune system's response to a flu vaccine, and we think that this would almost certainly be the case for a COVID vaccine, one of the best ways you can boost your response to a flu vaccine is to get a couple extra hours of sleep the night before you get your flu vaccine. So everybody listening, when that COVID vaccine comes along, make sure you don't wake up early. Make sure you get a good, healthy night of sleep the night before.
I had not heard that. I've heard a lot and read a lot about how getting a good night's sleep will definitely help, you know, with heart and lung health, right? But I had not heard that about the immune system.
Right. Well, it's a third of our lives, and our bodies and brains and cells, they need it. So there's whatever it is that you're trying to do, address your mood, improve your relationships, do a little bit better in classes or athletic performance. Sleeping better is a unique opportunity for all of us.
And we've also talked about the connection between sleep and mental health and what sleep deprivation can do that, you know, continuously, like not getting enough sleep, what it does to our mental health.
Oh, absolutely. So it's as Dr. Wilson pointed out, there's a tight relationship between sleep, depression, and anxiety. Mm-hmm. And if you get a poor night of sleep tonight, you're more likely to respond poorly to stresses that come up tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. And Dr. Wilson, would you add to that?
Definitely, that is a very, very strong connection, that sleep problems alone can cause people to develop depression and anxiety disorders, and it's often an early warning sign. So doing your best to police your sleep schedule can really be a strong weapon to use against mental illness.
Let's take a phone call from one of our listeners as we talk about sleep problems and also about the winter blues, also known as seasonal affective disorder. Talking to two doctors about the signs of these conditions and what we can do to improve our health. The number to call is 651-227-6000. Again, 651-227-6000. If you've found a remedy that's helped you sleep better, if you found or had experience with having a SAD and you want to share your story, call and share it with us at 651-227-6000. You can certainly ask questions of the two doctors as well. Right now in Big Lake, let's talk to Matt. Hi, Matt.
Hi, how's it going?
I am doing okay today. I got a good night's sleep.
Oh, that's good.
How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
So what is your question?
It's actually a two-part question. The first part is I went in about a year ago and did a sleep study, and it was determined that I was right on the border of having sleep apnea, but it was a very mild form of it. And so my first question is, should I get another test, or should I try out a sleep apnea device? That I would prefer to go the route of something that's not as expensive, like a machine. And then my second question, or second part to the question, would be, does sleep apnea exacerbate the condition of SAD, seasonal affective disorder?
Do you think you have SAD, Matt? Do you have the seasonal affective disorder?
I tend to, you know, I've been looking at the last few winters, and I do tend to become less active. I'm a person that ran track and cross country, and I was, you know, I'm very active when it's warmer out. I run all the time, and I do have a treadmill in the house, so there's like no excuse to not work out or anything. But for some reason, whenever it gets super dark out, you know, I'm going to work and it's dark out, and I'm coming home and it's dark out. You know, that tends to have an effect on your psyche, I guess.
Right. Matt, you're speaking for a lot of people. So, Dr. Wilson, I'll start with you first, because he's asking about both being having SAD and also being diagnosed with sleep apnea. So let's talk about the SAD part of it first. So he's wondering, like, what's the relationship between the two?
So the relationship is, and it's been pretty well known, that obstructive sleep apnea can worsen all types of depression, and that would include seasonal affective disorder. With sleep apnea, you are having changes in oxygen level in the brain because of the blockages while breathing, and that can affect your concentration, and that affects how rested you feel each day. And just like Dr. Howell was saying, when you don't rest well and recharge at night, it's much harder to meet the challenges of the next day and the next morning. And people with obstructive sleep apnea are always having to fight against that extra level of sleepiness, that extra level of cloudy thinking that can make managing stress difficult and worsen that depression.
And Dr. Howell, take us back a step. Explain what sleep apnea is.
Sure. Dr. Wilson did a wonderful job. But obstructive sleep apnea is the collapse of the upper airway during sleep. It's more common as we get older. It's more common in men until women go through menopause, and then women have a risk of sleep apnea about as high as men do. It is incredibly common. Depending upon how you define sleep apnea, anywhere from 10 to 20% of the adult population has it. 40 to 50% of adults snore. So if you snore, or your bed partner snores, you are at risk of developing sleep apnea. Sleep apnea only occurs in humans. Our other primate relatives don't have obstructive sleep apnea. And the reason why that is that we have evolved an upper airway to allow us to vocalize. So just as we are talking right now, Angela, that is part of the process that contributes to our tendency for our airway to collapse at night. So sleep apnea, the way I describe it, is the price we pay for being able to talk. So it's this incredibly common problem. It's more common as we gain weight, but you can certainly have obstructive sleep apnea even if you are not overweight. And as Dr. Wilson pointed out, it can lead to people feeling tired and exhausted the next day. In terms of Matt's specific question of, can obstructive sleep apnea drive seasonal affective disorder? What I would say is that, as Dr. Wilson pointed out, it can certainly contribute to mood problems. But in addition to that, the tendency towards losing our circadian rhythm, that's our body's 24-hour clock, in terms of what time of the day does your body think it is right now? Instead of 11:24 in the morning, is it actually thinking it's 9 in the morning? Is it thinking it's 3 o'clock in the afternoon? There's this, every single one of us, everyone listening, has an intrinsic circadian rhythm. And depending upon how closely that rhythm is aligned to 11:25 in the morning right now, depends a lot, will determine a lot in terms of how you feel, how your mood feels, your appetite, your capacity to learn in school, your performance in athletics. And with the most important determinant of that is bright light in the morning. A natural sunrise is what jumpstarts our circadian rhythm. But unfortunately, in the wintertime, we don't get that sunrise. Even if we're up at that time, it's often cloudy, as we know. And mm-hmm. then in the evening, we get so much light from screens, from phones, from tablets. It is confusing our brain into making it think that the sun is still out. So in large part, what I would say is much of the mood component of seasonal depression is related to a breakdown of your body's natural circadian rhythm. That's your body's 24-hour clock.
And so I know that a lot of people may think they have sleep apnea or they've received the diagnosis, but they haven't taken any action to actually get treatment. And so can we talk about how effective
Sure.
The CPAP machines are, and is that the only way to treat sleep apnea?
Sure. Well, let me first say I sympathize with everyone. This is an incredibly common problem, and as a field, we have not done a great job of being open and being flexible in terms of our implementation of how we come up with strategies. So as mentioned, obstructive sleep apnea is the collapse of the upper airway. This is a mechanical problem. It requires a mechanical solution. The most commonly used strategy is positive airway pressure, continuous positive airway pressure, also known as CPAP. And what that does is that it acts as a splint. It blows air through the nose. It keeps the back of the throat open. All right? That works great for 50% of people. So flip a coin. But the other 50% of people, they don't like having it on their face. They may have some claustrophobia or some anxiety issues. And I get it. I understand. It's important to know that there are other strategies. There are oral appliances. They look like a little athletic mouth guards. You wear these at night. It helps keep your jaw forward. There are surgical therapies that are useful for the treatment of obstructive sleep apnea. And finally, a tremendous number of people, as Matt described, being borderline, having just a little bit of obstructive sleep apnea. Sometimes the best thing to do is sleep on your side and work on other strategies like weight loss, make healthy food choices, more exercise.
But what really is not an option is to do nothing.
Well, unfortunately, a lot of people
option,
do nothing.
Right.
Yeah, that's not a good option, correct,
mm-hmm.
Angela?
Because I'm just thinking, again, about this winter. I mean, we know that there is a deadly virus out there, and people, you know, are doing, you know, things like wearing masks and trying to stay home more. But a lot of things are out of our control. But here are some things that are within our control, right? If we, mm-hmm. you know, take our sleep seriously and do the best we can to get enough sleep, and you know, that could give us a better chance of, you know, surviving COVID-19, should we contract it? Like, I just want people to think about, like, mm-hmm. what can we control? Dr. Wilson?
You can't see me nodding, but I'm sitting here agreeing with you.
Yes. I can see you. No, I can't.
but yes, it's very important to focus on the things we can control, and a regular and healthy routine and regular and healthy bedtime is one of those things.
Mm-hmm. And okay, let's take another phone call before we move through to a news break. This is Tim in Mendota Heights, who's been holding on. Hey there, Tim.
Hi, good morning.
Hi.
My comment is sometimes people, I think, are unaware of the impact alcohol has on your sleep hygiene. Mm-hmm. Your guest can speak to the details. My understanding is people used to think stage 4 REM sleep was what you really needed, but it's a stage 3 sleep that you can't. You can't sink into that in a deep level if you've had too much to drink. But people think that alcohol is a way to kind of ease into sleep, but it actually is counterproductive.
Mm. And yes, we've heard that discussion quite a bit. Dr. Howell, what do we know about how alcohol, I guess, close to bedtime impacts our ability to sleep and how well we sleep?
Well, I thank Tim for bringing that up. That's a very important point. Alcohol is naturally sedating, but it only is sedating for a couple of hours. And while it's doing that, it's going to, one, make sleep apnea worse. And I think almost everyone knows a story or has heard of the story of a bed partner who, after an even modest amount of alcohol, a beer or a glass of wine, will snore more and may have a greater tendency towards sleep apnea. But in addition to that, as we are withdrawing from alcohol, and I must emphasize, even a modest amount, even a glass or two of a small amount of alcohol leads to, as we withdraw from it, more hypervigilance, more disruption of our sleep in the middle of the night, more vivid and often distressing dreams as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And Dr. Wilson, then that makes it more likely, I guess, for us to have symptoms of depression because we're not getting enough sleep or good sleep.
Definitely. I'm really glad that Tim called and pointed that out because, yes, many people do think that alcohol is a good sleep aid, but it can have very severe mental health effects because it is eventually disrupting the sleep process.
Let's go back to the phone lines. In Moorhead, Jane is on the phone. Good morning to you, Jane.
Good morning, Angela.
Hi.
I love this topic. I called in because I have SAD and I experienced a brain injury. And so sleeping became very, very difficult during that. And I found an app that you can get for your phone or computer. It's called Super Better. And it was developed by a social scientist and game designer who experienced her own brain injury and decided that if she didn't make a game out of it, she wasn't going to get through it. And so it's an app on your computer or phone, but you mostly do all of the activities offline. And there's all kinds of things I knew I had to do to get my brain back going and to take care of my SAD or anxiety. And in the app, you can add your own quests. There's quests in there for the different topics. There's even a Stay Strong in the Pandemic power pack. And you can invite your friends to play with you and cheer you on and be your ally. You can create your own secret identity. And it's just a way to make it all fun and stay on top of it and include your friends so you have that support.
So, Jane,
I really recommend
it. Yeah, give me the name of it. It sounds like you said Super Better is the name of the app.
Super Better. And there's a TED Talk with Jane McGonigal, the designer. She explains all the science behind it. And I think, you know, with the doom and gloom of the pandemic, if we start thinking of this pandemic as in a different way, if we reframe it and we start giving ourselves power ups every time we wear our mask and, you know, encourage each other, I think we can really find a way to come together and beat it.
And Jane, when do you use this app? Do you use it at nighttime or what time of day?
I actually go on in the morning. I decide what bad guy I'm going to defeat that day. Sometimes it's the sticky chair that wants to keep me stuck in it. Sometimes I just need to shake it, move it, you know. And then I do my power-ups, which can be chug a glass of water or play with my dog. There's all kinds of them. And then there's three quests that I do every day. And so I go on in the morning. I pick what I'm going to do. And then in the afternoon, I log in and I put in my points for the day and I click what I did this and then I get, you know, celebration and then I go on, I'm allies with some of my friends and my kids and I see what they've accomplished and I send them positive messages. And
well, Jane, I want some of your energy. Yeah, I do want to know. I'm curious. You say you have SAD. Tell me about the diagnosis of SAD. When did you find out for sure that you have seasonal affective disorder?
It took a while to figure it out. I was in therapy with my therapist for about 5 years, and this was in the 2000s. And so, you know, finally realizing after years of being with her, this is happening at a specific time. Mm-hmm. And I would get all kinds of energy in the summer and then just plateau and completely crash. And I've used light therapy. I've tried it all, vitamin D, you know, and I found things that work. For me, it's going for a walk after the sun has set or right at sunset. It's getting light in the morning, making sure I am getting some vitamin D, and really staying on top of my anxiety. Just finding those things that work takes time. And so my heart goes out to anyone that's just getting to that point where they're getting that diagnosis, although getting the diagnosis was really great. And so just because it helped me understand
what
know,
was happening
and have a path.
Jane, there in Moorhead, thank you, Jane, for calling in and sharing your story. I think that has inspired a lot of people. I appreciate it. Dr. Wilson, what did you hear there in Jane's story?
I heard quite a lot in Jane's story, and I'm so glad that she shared it. So she is having a typical experience. Seasonal affective disorder is more common in women, and it is more common in people who struggle with other types of mental illness, such as the anxiety that she talked about. Yes, it can take some time to get a diagnosis of seasonal affective disorder. You need to have those specific depressive symptoms during a winter season for at least 2 years in a row to help clue you and your doctor in that this is what's causing it. And usually those symptoms will self-resolve as the spring and summer come up, but that's 4 to 5 months of feeling horrible and draggy and heavy and having that increased appetite and carb cravings, which can really cause a lot of weight gain and really drag on your total body health all year long. It sounds like Jane used some of our most effective and most common treatments for seasonal affective disorder. So not only did she utilize light therapy, which is unique in the treatment of seasonal affective disorder, but it sounds like she was using cognitive behavioral therapy, which is a type of talk therapy that focuses on reframing negative or self-defeating thoughts and introducing positive and mood-boosting behaviors to try and decrease the symptoms of depression from SAD. It was a beautiful story.
And yeah, Dr. Wilson, you know, I paused you earlier as we were getting into light therapy and the boxes and the different types of lamps. But I want to go back to it right now because I have a question on Twitter. Neil asks, do the SAD lights, do the seasonal affective disorder lights actually work? And are there affordable options? So, you know, do you have patients who have tried light therapy and like, yes, that made a difference?
Yes. I personally have patients who've tried light therapy. I've used light therapy myself, and it is a very well-studied and established treatment for seasonal affective disorders since they made the seasonal affective disorder diagnosis way back in 1984. So what to look for when you are trying to purchase an effective light? And here are some of the minimum requirements. So if you're using full-spectrum bright light therapy, it needs to be bright, and that intensity is 10,000 lux.
10,000 lux, L-U-X, right?
L-U-X. Mm-hmm. That is a measurement of the intensity of light. Mm-hmm. It's about 20 times more intense than your regular indoor light bulb.
Mm-hmm. And for how many minutes a day?
An effective light therapy box you want to use for around 30 minutes. Some people may need to extend their time if they're using a less intense box. What's important is that if you're looking for a light box, make sure that it is designed for the treatment of seasonal affective disorder, not for other skin conditions. Mm-hmm. The light needs to be shielded from UV rays so that it will be safe for your skin and your eyes. And you want that 30 to 45 minute session first thing in the morning if you can, because you're trying to simulate that early morning sunlight that is missing for us in the winter. So the timing can really improve the intensity of this treatment. And you want that light box to be a little bit farther than arm's reach from you. Big keys. There are a couple warnings here. Remember, you are not supposed to stare in to your light therapy box. Feel free to have other activities, be reading, having a conversation, eating your breakfast. But it's not meant that you have to stare directly at it. Your eyes just need to be exposed to the light for it to be effective. And there are certain people who need to consult with their doctor or maybe avoid light therapy altogether. If you know or suspect that you have bipolar disorder, you should work with your doctor to talk about whether light therapy will be helpful for you or if it has the risk of becoming overstimulating. And then people who have light-sensitive diseases of the eye or skin should really talk to their doctors before considering light therapy.
All right. I want to take more phone calls now.
Tip.
Oh, I'm sorry. One more? Okay. One more.
Pro tip for Minnesota sufferers who have known how to deal with seasonal affective disorder for years. Remember, you need to change your fluorescent bulb for SAD every 2 years. It may be imperceptibly dimming, and you won't be getting your full 10,000 lux.
That is an important tip. Okay, let's go back to the phone lines as we talk about sleep problems and also the winter blues known as seasonal affective disorder. 651-227-6000 on the phone right now in Minneapolis. Anna is there. Thank you for holding on, Anna.
Yes, hi.
Hi, what did you want to share with us?
Well, I don't suffer from seasonal affective disorder that I know of. But in talking and thinking about just sleep disorders, I suffer from something called sleep paralysis. Mm-hmm. And actually, I think it was the Dr. Howell who's on right now who treated me. And I had no idea for years how this had deeply negatively affected my life. And that diagnosis actually saved my life. And it turns out more people than I realize suffer from sleep paralysis, including two of my kids. So I'm just wondering, you know, if maybe one of the doctors could speak to that as well, how common that is and how it can give people relief having a diagnosis.
Okay, that's Anna in Minneapolis. What is sleep paralysis, Dr. Howell?
Hi, Anna. Nice to talk to you again. So sleep paralysis is what happens when we go into REM sleep. When we're in REM sleep, we are dreaming very, very vividly. This is when our brain is trying to process all of the different information, often emotional content that occurs throughout the course of the day. And in order to do that properly, our body needs to be paralyzed so we don't act out our dreams. But as we wake up from REM sleep, we can still experience that paralysis. Or sometimes when we're dreaming, we'll have some recollection of this. I think many of the listeners probably have had some experiences or memory of a dream in the past where they felt frozen, like they couldn't move or they couldn't scream. Particularly when you're young or having a frightening nightmare as a child, that is sleep paralysis. It is fairly common. It can be extremely distressing, as Anna mentioned. Many people can feel that there is something terribly wrong with them. They feel like they're having a stroke, maybe a seizure. There's often very frightening dream content on top of this. So you're lying there and you're frozen and you're in your bedroom, but there's often an intruder or a demonic presence that you can feel nearby. It is just often sheer terror. It is usually due to some underlying sleep problem. It can be anything from sleep apnea to insomnia to restless leg syndrome. It can just be sleep deprivation. If you're deprived of enough sleep, it can happen. So if you fix that underlying problem, usually the sleep paralysis goes away.
Mm. All right. And Hugo, let's talk to Stacy, who is on the line. Good morning to you, Stacy.
Hi, good morning. I'm calling because I'm curious about what tips you can give a night shift worker. I'm a nurse. I work overnight, and I believe I have seasonal affective disorder, so I've kind of done some self-remedy in the past, but I've never had to work night shift during the winter.
Okay, and can I ask you, so have you not gone to a doctor to see if you might have seasonal affective disorder?
You know, I haven't gone to the doctor specifically for the diagnosis, but I might after listening to the radio this morning, but I have been seeing a therapist for a few years now, so it's never been brought up. It's as like, oh, this is a diagnosis, but it's more, okay, well, what are some things we can do for you to
but
help you feel better?
You've noticed a change in the wintertime. You're different.
And
you're a nurse. Yep. So first, Stacy, thank you for your service. We appreciate that. Our nurse, Stacy and Hugo, working in a night shift, working overnights. What can help her with getting good rest? She says she thinks she might have SAD. Dr. Wilson?
Yes, being a night shift worker can kind of change the timing in which using light therapy would make sense for you. So when we talk about seasonal affective disorder in somebody who has a change in sleep phase, you would want to do it in your version of the morning to bring in your exposure to bright light. You're giving your body as many signals as possible to say, this is the time that I need to be most awake and alert. So you get opposite and contrary instructions that it is reasonable for you to use bright light therapy in the evening or in the night when you and your body needs to be alert.
So like as she's beginning her shift and, you know, I'm not sure what her hours are, but if they were like 11 p.m. to 7 a.m., she would use the light therapy at like
in her morning,
10, 11 at night as she's starting. Right. Dr. Howell, mm-hmm. What a lot of folks are working two jobs right now, working odd hours or trying to work after their kids go to sleep. And so what does that do when you're just working at hours when normally your body would be asleep?
Right. Yeah, it's very disruptive. It's disruptive to your body's circadian rhythm. It's disruptive to your ability to get good sleep, and it's disruptive to your appetite and mood. Just to add on to what Dr. Wilson said to Stacy, I would get a light box, exactly as Dr. Wilson described, 10,000 lux light box. If you're looking for a local company, Circadian Optics is a local company. They make very nice light boxes, and I would use it specifically for the first half of your shift. And I would start a couple days before you start your shift. So if you have 3 to 4 days, start using the light box. If you're going to be up from 8 o'clock at night to 8 o'clock in the morning, start using it until about 2 o'clock in the morning and push that circadian rhythm back. Adjust your meal times as well. So when you come home, come home from work, you can have, you can start, and if you want to start sleeping at that time, use sunglasses. So if you do not get sunlight exposure, sunrise exposure from 8 o'clock in the morning until you come home, you can use melatonin. That's been demonstrated to be effective, but just in small doses, usually about a milligram or so. When you would like to sleep. And then after you're done sleeping, that's when we start thinking about meal timing. Go ahead and have breakfast, even though it's 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Go ahead and have breakfast at that time. Keep with the consistency. Light for the first half of your shift. Sunglasses in the morning on the way home. That's been studied in nurses. And then consistent with the meal timing. And finally, it's really important to note that overnight shift work is incredibly socially isolating. Mm-hmm. It feels like you're living in a parallel universe with the people that you live with and care about and love. And so you need, it's really important to have social and family support and understand, why can't mommy get up and play with me? Mommy needs her sleep. She'll play with you when she's done at, 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
Right. I worked overnight shift off and on for like 12 years. And you feel guilty when you can't accept invitations, when you can't be with the people you care about in the hours that they, want to be active. But we need to be protective of our sleep.
100%.
Let's take another phone call in Minneapolis. Melissa's on the phone. Hey there, Melissa.
Hi.
Hi. What did you want to share with us?
Well, I want to say thank you for taking my call and thank you for having this conversation. It's so important, especially right now, to focus in on people's mental health. Mm-hmm. And sleep is incredibly important. My husband has anxiety, depression, sad, and sleep apnea. So to hear them talk about it and have a conversation about it, I feel like it takes some of the stigma away from
it. We all struggle, right? So
for sure, definitely. Well, and especially being a partner of someone who constantly has to be the support system, it's important for me to make sure that I'm taking care of myself too. Mm. And one thing that I'm trying to make sure that we do is we don't always get what we need from our food. And so I am trying to make sure that we're taking healthy vitamin supplements. And the biggest change that we've made is with magnesium. And I wanted to ask the doctors what they think about the role of magnesium and how, and, things like not getting the kind of vitamin D and stuff that we need in our diet and how that affects our sleep. And then also one of the doctors brought up melatonin. And I am under the understanding that most people don't use melatonin properly. And so if he could speak about that a little bit, that would be great.
All right, Melissa, Minneapolis. And thank you for calling, Melissa. Vitamin D, Dr. Howell?
Vitamin D is a very important vitamin. In fact, it's a hormone. We do not get enough of it. particularly during the winter, and relevant for COVID. There is compelling evidence that vitamin D deficiency is possibly responsible for some of the increased mortality in COVID, in severe COVID cases. So vitamin D replacement, I would target your vitamin D levels probably between 60 and 80. In addition, other supplements that Melissa mentioned, melatonin, thank you for teeing that up for me really nicely, Melissa. Most melatonin is not a sleeping pill. It is a circadian compound that you use to adjust your circadian rhythm. So for example, with Stacy, who was talking about needing to starting to sleep in the morning after she's working overnight shifts, melatonin is very useful. If you have regular insomnia that is not due to a circadian rhythm problem, melatonin is not going to be useful. As a general rule, people tend to take too much melatonin, usually about a milligram is plenty. And instead of adjusting the dose, more important to adjust the timing. So if you take it at 10 o'clock at night and it doesn't seem to be working, instead of doubling the dose, why don't you try taking it at 9 o'clock in the evening, just as an idea. One other supplement, just to plug, is the importance of iron, especially for healthy premenopausal women, especially women who may have heavy menstrual cycles, because of iron deficiency can contribute to restlessness, restless leg syndrome, which really interferes with sleep.
All right. Well, our time is coming to a close here, but I do want to thank our listeners who called in with some great questions and shared some wonderful stories. And, you know, the message I got out of our conversation today is that, again, we can't take our sleep for granted, and we have to do what we can to get enough sleep. And we can't take our mental health for granted either. And we have to make sure that we're doing all we can to learn about, you know, what leads to anxiety and depression and the winter blues. We know that's real here in Minnesota. I want to thank our two guests, Dr. Michael Howell, who is the vice chair for education and faculty affairs in the Department of Neurology at the University of Minnesota, also the director of the Sleep Performance Training for Athletes program at mHealth Fairview, and Dr. Sadra Wilson, a psychiatrist and neuromodulation fellow at the University of Minnesota Medical School. And a reminder to everyone, too, at 6 this evening, Governor Walz will be announcing new restrictions on bars, restaurants, and gyms and fitness centers as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic. You can listen to the governor's announcement live here on NPR News or online at nprnews.org at 6 this evening. This conversation was produced by NPR's Arfi Getty.
You just heard a recording of a live radio show from NPR News. To add your voice to the conversation, you can call in at 651-227-6000 or tweet us at @AngelaDavisNPR. And if you missed us live, you'll find all of our shows by subscribing to this podcast. Thanks for listening.